for the time that is ours together this morning. I want to try to talk about called to serve. Called to serve. It's fitting that on this second Sunday after the Epiphany, a day before the national holiday set aside for America's prophet, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., that drum major for justice, that our lectionary text is centered around the theme of call and service. For during the season of Epiphany, we celebrate the fact that the Advent promise of Christ as light of the world has now come down to dwell among us to reveal God's love and liberative impulse toward humanity. Like the kings who return to their countries a different way, Epiphany invites us to carry to all we meet the light of Christ through expressions of love and Christian service. Throughout the years, many great things have been said about the call to serve from Christians and non-Christians alike that can spark our imagination. Ralph Waldo Emerson famously said, "The purpose of life is not to be happy. It is to be useful, to be honorable, to be compassionate, to have it make some difference that you have lived and have lived well." Charles Dickens mused, "No one is useless in the world who lightens the burdens of another." Bell Hooks once said, "Service to others strengthens our capacity to know compassion and deepens our insight. To serve another, I cannot see them as an object. I must see their personhood." The writer of Deuteronomy in Deuteronomy 16 and 20 declare, "Justice and only justice you shall pursue." James Cone, the father of black liberation theology, was the first American theologian to base his theology on this probing question: your neighbor is oppressed. What is your responsibility? Latin American liberation theologian Oscar Romero said, "Faced with human suffering, all people of compassion must confront this dilemma. Either we become numb to the pain of those around you, or you begin to take action on their behalf." Then Bishop Shelby Spong cuts to the chase with these biting words: "Every act, whether it be individual or corporate, must be judged as right or wrong based solely on whether it enhances or diminishes the life of another. If my action diminishes another, it also diminishes me. A diminished life is never a place where holiness will be found. Diminished lives will never be loving lives." I tell you, many great things have been said about the call to serve. Well, as we come to our text, taken from what scholars call 2nd Isaiah or Deutero Isaiah, we see the importance of service as part of God's plan to bring liberation, deliverance, and salvation to the world. In our text, we eavesdrop in on a conversation between God and an unknown servant during which God issues this challenging call. In the light of all that is going on in Judah, a nation torn apart by captivity, greed, and exile, God shows up and commissions this unknown servant and essentially volunteers his service. It's right there in the B clause of verse 6. God says, "I will give you as a light to the nations so that salvation may reach to the end of the earth." Again, this body of text is from 2nd Isaiah or Deutero Isaiah. And it's important to point that out because the book of Isaiah takes on different characteristics. The entire book is broken down into three sections. 1st Isaiah, which are chapters 1 through 39, 2nd Isaiah, which are chapters 40 through 55, and 3rd Isaiah, which are chapters 56 through 66. These divisions are a convenient shorthand for explaining the different concerns and historical issues that are addressed in each section. Well, in our text, taken from 2 Isaiah, it is the period that recounts the return of the people from Judah from exile, and it recounts God's promise to reconstitute them as a nation. And it is within that context that God issues this call to serve. I will give you as a light to the nations so that my salvation may reach the ends of the earth. In other words, the text is teaching us that whenever God does something glorious for us, God ought to be able to do something grand through us. So God, as God plans to bless the people of Judah, reminds them that they are to be a blessing in return and be a blessing in a big way. Listen, whenever God blesses you, we ought to bless somebody else. Whenever God lifts us up, we ought to lift somebody else up. Mahalia Jackson said it this way: if I can help somebody as I travel along, if I can cheer someone with a word or song, if I can show somebody they are traveling wrong, then my living shall not be in vain. God says, I will send you as a light to the nations. But why to the nations? Number one, because God's vision is always bigger than our vision. And number two, because God desires that all shall be saved and liberated. So check it out. In verse 4, while the servant complains about how difficult it has been to serve Judah, his own community, God responds with a shocker and says, it's too light a thing that you should be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob and to restore the survivors of Israel. In other words, the call has now grown beyond domestic affairs to the welfare of all the nations. Listen, God says, I'm not just sending you to Judah, but I'm sending you to the entire world. Unfortunately, as we see in our text, and as we witness in our own time, in response to God's grand vision, one of the chief temptations is to scale back the assignment to human dimensions, to what Reinhold Niebuhr called approximate justice. In other words, we'll just do the little bit we can, or we'll just apply a few bandages of compassion to the deep and gaping wounds of social justice. But Dr. King said that applying bandages when radical surgery is needed is an injustice in and of itself. Listen, as the text is tailored to teach us, God is not looking for approximate justice, but God is looking for justice to roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. God desires that all shall be saved. In the text is teaching us that our vision for justice and liberation in the world is often way too small. It's right there in the A clause of verse 6. God tells the servant that only focusing on saving and liberating your own people is too light a thing. In other words, it's trivial. It's too small. It doesn't go far enough. Listen, it's too light a thing to love people who only look like you. It's too light a thing to advocate just for your group, your race, or your class. It's too light a thing to put personal interests above the concerns of others. It's too light a thing to support the ideology of America First, border closings, and nativist trade policies. The text says just looking out for your own community, your own group, your own race, and your own nation is too light a thing. In other words, what the world needs is not another group of people just scrambling for advantage or clamoring for privilege, but rather a community of people engaged in acts of radical love and radical hospitality that move beyond the narrow interests of the self to the advancement of the common good for everybody. That's the reason James Cone said that American evangelical theology has bad priorities. Listen, when your theology is primarily concerned about just saving bodies rather than souls, that's a bad priority. If you're more focused on personal sins rather than structural sins that rob people of dignity and their ability to thrive, that's a bad priority. When you place more emphasis on doctrine than you do on deeds, and religion than you do on righteousness, those are bad priorities. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., he put it this way. He said the purpose of the church was not to create dogma, theology, or creeds, but rather to commit to action on behalf of the least of these. King said, and I quote, "Jesus always recognized that there was a danger of having a high blood pressure of creeds, but an anemia of deeds." In other words, bad priorities. The question the text prompts us to ask is, what are we condoning today? What injustice are we overlooking? Who are we excluding? Who is not welcome to the table? And who is being othered and left out by our theologies and policies and socioeconomic ideas? God wants us to develop a theology that's big enough and wide enough and inclusive enough for everybody. In fact, I love the golden rule of Islam, which states, not one of you have truly believed until you wish for the other what you wish for yourselves. Well, I'm done. When I opened up my little sermon, I shared with you some thoughts that I thought were compelling about service, but I left off one of my favorites. One of my favorite quotes about service comes from that prize fighter, that famous prize fighter, that philosopher of the squared circle known as the boxing ring, the greatest of all time, Muhammad Ali. Ali said this, "Service to others is the rent you pay for your room here on the earth." Come on now, I love that. I don't know how you feel about it, but I love that. Service to others is the rent you pay for your room here on the earth. I love the imagery of that. Service to others is how you pay your heavenly bills here on earth. This quote reminds us that life ought to be accompanied by responsibilities. Life is not just fun and games all the time, but all of us are called to leave the world a little bit better than we found it. Listen, not all of us have to be activists. Not all of us have to march in the streets. Not all of us have to go downtown and protest. But all of us, every last one of us, are called to do something in the form of serving others. It's called paying it forward. Listen, I'll take my seat after I tell you this. Pay your rent. Come on now. I said, pay your rent for the air that you breathe, which you did not create, and for the life that you have, of which you are not the author, and for the blessings that you have received, you owe God some rent. Well, what is the rent that we owe God? Paul gives us a clue in Romans 12:1 with these words, present your bodies as a living sacrifice acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. In the context of Romans, you know what a living sacrifice is? It means living in such a way that your life makes a difference. Romans 12 is about more than religious rites, rules, and rituals. It's about living righteously. And check it out, righteous living can never be disconnected from the way we treat others. For John Wesley already told us there's no social holiness. There's no holiness except social holiness. In other words, the rent that we owe God is a life that is dedicated to God and to neighbor. It is to love God, and it is to love neighbor. So let me just tell you, if you have life, you owe God some rent. If you are alive, God is due some rent. If you're on the top side of the grave, God has the right to some rent. If you are in the land of the not yet dead, God is owed some rent. So pay your rent. Listen, don't be a squatter and a thief. Pay your rent. Don't live on the premises illegally. Pay your rent. Listen, when you love your neighbors, when you fight for justice and speak up for the least of these, you're paying rent. When you advocate for the voiceless and seek to do good to those who need help, you are paying rent. When you love justice and mercy and walk humbly with God, you are paying rent. When you serve others, are kind to strangers, and do good, you are paying rent. When you play any role in trying to create a world where all lives truly and really do matter, black lives and gay lives and trans lives and poor lives and lives of those who are differently able and those who are under mental distress, you are paying rent. So let us all pay our rent, for all of us are indeed called to serve. Amen.